on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As the new year fast approaches, we take a look back at 2019, in which one of the most underreported stories was a continued increase in religious persecution across the globe. And it may be surprising to some that Christians fared the worst of all believers in this climate of violent intolerance. And from the Vatican, Pope Francis continued his pastoral agenda of reaching those on the peripheries in an increase in papal trips. But headlines covering Church Universal were dominated by scandal and pushes for change of church teaching. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. And on Register Radio today, we are joined by Vaticanista Edward Penton, who's the Register's Rome correspondent. But first, Tom Farr, a leading authority on international religious freedom, joins us now. Mr. Farr serves as the president of the Religious Freedom Institute in Washington, D.C. He has served as the first director of the State Department's Office of International Religious Freedom. And for 10 years, he also served as the associate professor of religion and world affairs at Georgetown University. Our Register readers may know Mr. Farr as a frequent source in our stories on religious freedom, and recently he wrote a commentary at ncregister.com on this year's Hong Kong protest. Welcome to the show, Mr. Farr.
Pleasure to be with you.
So this seems an especially bad year for religion across the globe. From your point of view, what were some of the worst spots around the world?
Well, it has been a bad year, although I have to say that it's not perhaps as unusual as it may seem. If you looked at religious persecution internationally on a graph, it got high about 8 or 10 years ago, and it has stayed high. Some of the persecutors have shifted a bit, and the causes have moved around a bit, but the basic proposition that there's a crisis in international religious freedom has remained true. And, unfortunately, the statistical reality that Christians are at the top of the list has also remained true. So, in a sense, 2019 was a continuation of something that's been out there for a long time. The places where it has been the worst include, I would say, China, pretty close to the top of the list, which is of some concern because of the recent, I guess it was 2018, concord between the Vatican and China. It's gotten worse for all religious groups in China. It has gotten worse in much of the Middle East, or it has stayed bad in much of the Middle East. Although ISIS has been, quote, defeated, unquote, it remains a threat, and indeed the suffering that was caused by ISIS in Iraq, for example, and in Syria, to Christians and other religious minorities continues for a whole variety of reasons. Pakistan and India, one a Muslim-majority country, the other a Hindu-majority country, have continued to have serious problems with religious freedom. Burma or Myanmar is a place with terrible problems. In some areas of sub-Saharan Africa, such as Nigeria, a perennial problem that continues. And in the Far East, of course, North Korea is perhaps the poster child of religious persecution, where terrible things go on. And then I'll just mention Russia and places like Russian-occupied Ukraine, where religious persecution has indeed gotten worse in the last couple of years since the Russians invaded Ukraine. But problems within Russia itself have continued. So it's a sad reality, and I should mention that although the violent religious persecution has not been nearly as virulent in the West, in places like Western Europe, in the United States and Canada, and Australia and New Zealand, we have had terrible instances of religious persecution and an increase in discrimination, invidious discrimination against Christians and others. So it's a worldwide problem, and one that I hope that more and more Catholics will become aware of and begin to do something about.
You mentioned that China is one of the most troubling parts of the globe for religious persecutions. What exactly is happening under Chinese Premier Xi Jinping in this process of sinicization?
Well, the Chinese have, since the Communist Revolution of 1948-49, have been doing what communists do, and that is trying really to either destroy religion or to control it. Under the Cultural Revolution, under Mao Zedong in the 1960s and early 70s, there really was literally an attempt to destroy religion, to kill all the priests and the pastors and to establish policies that would strangle religion. The Chinese learned from that, I think, including the communists, that you can't kill religion. So since then, really since the 1970s, they have had variants of a policy of trying to control it, manage it, adapt it to the socialist model or the communist model of the Chinese state. And we have seen with all premiers variations of that theme. What we're seeing under Xi Jinping for the last 5 years has been a fierce return to a modern, if you like, 21st century kind of cultural revolution. Not so much death and destruction as occurred during Mao Zedong's rule, but nevertheless, a very, very sophisticated and fierce persecution of Muslims, particularly those in Xinjiang province in the western part of China, continued persecution of Tibetan Buddhists, especially those in the, again, in the western part of China, but also of Christians, particularly evangelicals, as well as Catholics, in various kinds of crackdowns, which have become more and more serious under Xi Jinping. So the sinicization that you speak of is simply a fancy word for making Catholicism or other forms of religion Chinese communists, to accommodate them to China. Like in many countries, there's a fierce patriotism in China, and so there is a sort of an instinctive affirmation by many Chinese of the idea that religions in their country should be patriotic, if I can put it that way. But this goes much beyond that. It is an attempt literally to change the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
And to accommodate what the Chinese want as a Chinese form of Catholicism that is really a sort of a bureaucracy of the communist state. So that is a grave danger to religious freedom. It's a grave danger to stability in China, and it's certainly a grave danger to the Catholic witness in China, which historically has been battered but strong.
Now, across the globe, the Hong Kong protests have really captured attention, and there's a variety of views, of course, of those protests. But why have those protests become so important in this year?
Well, Hong Kong, as many of our listeners will know, was for a couple of centuries, since the 19th century, under British control as a colony. And then under an agreement worked out with China between China and the UK, it became part of China in 1997 with a degree of autonomy, which is probably unprecedented or close to unprecedented for any communist state. And they were to maintain that autonomy for 50 years, that is, until the year 2047. The problem is that there are a couple of problems here, in my view. One is that the structural autonomy that were given to the people in Hong Kong is utterly incompatible with what Xi Jinping is doing, which is not just repressing religion, but repressing all potential opposition to the control of the Chinese state. So what you have in Hong Kong, right on the southern border of China, is a basic law that permits a number of freedoms, including a substantial degree, not completely, but a substantial degree of religious freedom, but also freedom of speech. There's a relatively free press, something of a free judiciary. There are free and fair elections. This is utterly inimical to what Xi Jinping is trying to create in China. So what we saw was, several months ago, a law in Hong Kong that would have had criminals or those convicted of crimes in Hong Kong extradited to China to enjoy Chinese justice, if you can put it that way. Think of quotes around that phrase. And this brought a million people out into the streets, which tells you that it really hit a nerve. And it has grown since then. And it has expanded beyond that particular law, which was withdrawn, at least temporarily, to the whole bag of civil liberties that the people of Hong Kong enjoy and are increasingly realizing that they are in danger. And the first of those to go, in my view, will be the what we call in America, or traditionally have called, the first freedom, which is religious freedom. And the reason for that is not complicated. If you have religious freedom, you have people who have an authority that's greater than the state, that's more important to them than government. That's a limit on government, and it is precisely the reason that any totalitarian despot, whether it's communist or otherwise, cannot abide the existence of free religious beings and institutions within their state. It's why Stalin tried to kill religion, Hitler tried to kill religion, Mao tried to kill religion, and it is why I fear that the religious people, including the Catholics of Hong Kong, are in grave danger, because if China decides to crush Hong Kong, it's something it certainly has the power to do, then we are really going to have a worldwide crisis that will involve the United States and will do great harm to the religious people and institutions of Hong Kong. So it's a really important problem, and one that is getting a fair amount of press, not the religious freedom part of it so much, but anytime there's this kind of demonstration, it's getting a good deal of press, as it should, because it's a matter of great concern.
Right. And really, in this last, the answer to that last question, I mean, I think you touched upon what is so important for our audience to understand, and that is, what is religious freedom? It sounds to me like that should be another segment of Register Radio, and I hope that we can invite you back for that. Thomas Farr, thank you so much for joining us.
Delighted. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, Edward Penton will join us to talk about 2019 Vatican Year-End Review. Stay tuned for more of Register Radio on EWTN.
If you're like me, you probably go through the same thing every Christmas. So many names on the list and not sure of what to get them. This year I'm giving something special. Subscriptions to EWTN's National Catholic Register. It's the award-winning newspaper that's filled with solid Catholic reporting, Catholic education, book reviews, entertainment, travel, and more. If I order a subscription for myself or give one as a gift, I get a DVD of EWTN's original movie, Mother Cabrini, absolutely free. And I save on every additional subscription that I give. Here's how to order.
Get 26 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register for less than $2 per issue. Just go to ncregister.com/radio. Save even more and get $10 off on each additional gift subscription. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Between Nero and Diocletian, there were 18 Roman emperors and over 300 years of history. And intermittently during all of that time, Christians suffered persecution. I'm Father Charles Connor, and this is The Church in Time. Thousands of Christian men and women suffered excruciating deaths of martyrdom, beginning in 64 AD and continuing until 310 AD. Under Nero, it was a local persecution. 300 years later, under Diocletian, it was a persecution that extended throughout the Roman Empire. The catacombs grew up during these years, the burial places, the hiding places, the places where people of Christian faith gathered for the celebration of the Eucharistic sacrifice. Through all of these years, these Christian people were professing their belief that Jesus Christ was their only Lord and Savior, to the exclusion of all others, including even the Roman Emperor. This has been The Church in Time.
it's never too late.
And I've just started listening to Catholic radio in the mornings to listen to Mass, and all of a sudden I feel like I'm at a peace where I need to get back to my Catholic roots.
Thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm here with my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. We're also joined by Vaticanista Edward Penton, who is our Rome correspondent. Welcome back to Register Radio, Edward.
Thanks. Good to be with you again.
So, Edward, 2019 is really at a close. It's been a very full year. Especially from the Vatican point of view, what would you say were the highlights of this year?
Well, we had a large number of papal trips, for one thing, but there were also significant events like the Amazon Synod, which was much heralded and then much discussed in different ways. We had also a consistory of new cardinals. We had a number of new cardinals elevated to the college, and other issues too. We also had the first, we had the post-synodal apostolic exhortation of the youth synod last year. That also came out this year, and we had clerical sexual abuse also figured highly this year with the summit, the global Vatican summit in February, from which a number of concrete steps have been made.
That's right. You know, Edward, by my count, and you've covered this very well for the Register in our year-end edition, but by my count, the trips were, I think, 11 countries. And the last time he made that many trips to that many countries was, I think, in 2012, and it was maybe 12 countries that he visited. So it really was a big year of papal trips, and he continued to go to places that are smaller, often, not always, but often smaller Catholic communities in Asia or in the Middle East. And so what in those trips, I think, you know, were the highlights or the biggest I guess the biggest moments for Pope Francis?
Well, the first one, Jeanette, was the World Youth Day in Panama, which was which is very significant, as it always is. It drew a lot of young people to it. But there were also, I think it was his third trip to Africa, and he made a trip to three African countries. Mozambique, Madagascar, and Mauritius. That was a significant trip too. As always, he goes, as you say, to these countries on the periphery, which aren't. He doesn't always go to them, but the majority of them are, and they're countries that perhaps the Pope hasn't been for a long time, or they're not considered to be the sort of countries that a Pope has often gone to. John Paul II. Has been to all of the ones that I think he went to this year, except of course the United Arab Emirates, which was a very historic trip in February because it was the first time in modern history that a pope has set foot on the Arab Peninsula. So that was a very significant trip, and I think it seemed to pass a lot of people by how significant that was to have to have a pope on the Arab Peninsula. But that was a very successful trip, as, in fact, I think all of them were considered to have been very, very successful. And I think people there certainly welcomed him very warmly, certainly in Africa, which was one of the trips I went on. And I noticed that the people there were very, very welcoming and very, very happy to have him there.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, I think it was the fourth trip to Africa, if I remember correctly. But, you know, it was also Japan, which was one of the latest trips in the year. It was, I think, 40 years since a pontiff had been there. So another kind of historic trip there. And, of course, it's a very small Catholic community there in Japan. So these were very interesting trips to watch. You see the warmth in which people receive Pope Francis, and as always with papal trips, you see a lot of joy in the reception. But unfortunately, this year was not necessarily dominated by joy. It was really, again, a year of controversy. You mentioned the Sex Abuse Summit, so the summit that was intended to talk about how to handle the scourge of sexual abuse across the globe and in the church. This was held in February. It was attended by church leaders. I think it was all the conferences of the leadership of all the conferences of bishops across the world. What were the results of that gathering?
Well, I think the main one was the Pope published in May what was called Vox Estis Lux Mundi, which was a set of new norms, which one of the things was to place abuse of seminarians and religious in the same category as minors and vulnerable adults. That, of course, follows the McCarrick scandal, but others too. But it also established the metropolitan model for investigating accusations against bishops, which means that metropolitan bishops with a Holy See mandate would investigate other bishops in his diocese or suffragan bishops. And then other fruits were that there was a Vatican handbook for bishops published. There was the creation of task forces to help bishops and to help bishops deal with this issue and deal with them transparently to avoid the cover-ups of the past. And then just recently we've had a couple of papal rescripts, which are sort of mini decrees, one of which abolished the pontifical secret with regards to abuse cases. And this was aimed again to create greater certainty and transparency. But all of these were said to have come from the summit in February.
So, you know, one of the things you did not mention, but that is very interesting to our American audience, is the laicization or the reduction to the lay state of Theodore McCarrick. And that happened around the same time as the summit. And of course, we're still expecting a report about into the misconduct of McCarrick and how it remained covered for so long. That hasn't happened as of yet, but it's still expected. And I believe the American bishops have all been in Rome for visits related to what's going on in their diocese. These are called ad limina's, and that was recently mentioned that the report would be coming out. Some said by Christmas, so that's something expected, but has yet to happen.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. But of course, the other thing that has dominated the news this year was the Amazon Synod. You were there. What would you say? You know, now several months past, were the highlights?
Well, I think what came out of that synod was were three aspects, which were considered to be the most controversial, but the most discussed also during the month, which were first of all a proposal to ordain married men or permanent deacons as priests to cater for the shortage of priests in the region. The other thing was to an elaboration of an Amazonian rite, and also the third thing was to promote the discussion of a female diaconate. All these three things were probably the most contentious issues, but everything in that synod passed by 2/3 majority, so they were basically put forward to the Holy Father, who's going to put his own summary. He's going to write his own summary on the Amazon Synod, which I understand won't be out before Christmas. It'll be out in the next few months, possibly in the spring. So that'll be eagerly awaited. But it was a time of controversy. There were a few things within the synod which caused a lot of concern. One of the things was, of course, the Pachamama, the statue, which was brought into the Vatican Gardens and into the St. Peter's Basilica, and there are images of people bowing down and seeming to worship this statue, which caused a lot of concern that it was a sort of pagan worship brought in to the church and led to somebody actually taking four statues from a church in Rome and throwing them into the Tiber.
You know, Edward, I think perhaps one of the things of the year that maybe had the less impact, or I guess was less talked about, or some of the appointments that were made, and some of these happened early in the year. Others were, you know, a part of the consistory of cardinals that you mentioned in the first answer. What, in brief, what do you make of the people the Pope has chosen to surround himself with this year?
Yes, well, again, Jeanette, they're very much from the periphery, if you like. They're those who are dealing with the periphery. We had, for example, Father Michael Czerny, who's a Jesuit, who was just a priest, really, until the consistory in October. But the Pope elevated him. He's done a lot of work with migrants and refugees, and he made him quickly a bishop and then within a few days a cardinal. So it shows his priorities again, that he wants to deal very much with migrants and refugees, and with the third world, the global south. He wants to very much bring the global south into the mainstream of the church, and you saw that in his choice of cardinals. And then there was a big appointment at the end of this year, which was Cardinal Tagley of Manila, who he appointed prefect of the Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples, which is a very big and very prestigious dicastery in Rome, which basically caters for all of the missionaries around the world, which includes a large number of archdioceses and dioceses, and the appointments of missionary bishops as well. So he was brought in, and again, it's someone from, not from Italy, not from the West, but somebody from the Philippines. So very much emphasizing the Pope's emphasis there.
Well, Edward, as always, I want to thank you for the work that you do reporting for us from Rome. I know all of our readers are appreciative of your reporting, and thank you from them and us. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio. From Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.